of a shape up or get. If you've let all the fans down.
Have we not lost it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Well, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. You can get in touch on Twitter at Team 33. That's all in words. Also on Facebook and then also iTunes. There's more point in subscribing to the iTunes. Joe Coffey is here. He was phoning it in quite literally last week.
I was.
Derek Ryan is here, as
Hello.
Always.
What's the crack?
And so is Killian Woods, who
hey,
is back from the Euros.
Back from the Euros.
Yeah.
Good few weeks now.
In the end, so you got to the France match.
You're already just back, are you?
I made a long drive from Lille all the way down to Lyon via Dijon.
Because you had tickets for every Ireland game.
Not the Belgian game.
Okay.
Somewhat the lucky token for the games. Yeah. So I missed. Yeah, I was lucky enough to watch the Belgian game from from my own living room.
Was the France game amazing? Was it?
It was like I believed at halftime. I really did. I absolutely believed, and everyone around me believed. Gary Doherty, three rows down, believed.
Gary Doherty, friend of the show,
jumping up and around. Yeah. And I definitely believed. I was certain. I was like, how am I going to get more time off work? How am I going to get the flights? Where are we going to be playing? Then your phone won't load any of Wikipedia to check up where we're going to be playing, who will be playing. It just feeds in.
And then it became apparent that in the first 5 minutes things are going horribly wrong.
Yeah. I thought we'd have one more. Not to go all over that all again, but I thought we had our lucky goal that was the penalty. I thought we'd get at least one more because we always score at least once.
Was there a nice atmosphere between the two sets of fans in the stadium?
There was. You know, it was when France scored, it was spectacular. It was just a sea of noise. It was amazing. Like when we scored
the first goal.
When they scored their first goal, the place just erupted. It was crazy.
Relief, I think.
Yeah, and then, do you know what? It was nicer at 1-0. For the limited time it was 1-0, it was very nice because there was no pressure on us necessarily. We were kind of, alright, we missed our chances to go 2-0 up, but...
And did you think the noise from the Irish fans was good?
It was good, yeah. I really was worried going in there wasn't going to be enough of us to actually have any effect.
Because I think there was only like 5,000 tickets or something,
out of it. And that Leon
were they all in
huge.
That corner?
Yeah, we were all in that corner pretty much.
It must have been absolutely insane when they scored. I
saw people falling down different rows. Like people were in different areas. Like people ended up in different areas. The person beside me was different to the one when we scored. It was a bit crazy.
Was it as crazy as it was when they scored against Italy?
I don't know.
Yeah, because you were saying this off air, the Robbie Brady goal. I don't remember it that well either. The live moment.
I remember Houlihan's goal, Houlihan's miss, very, very clearly. Yeah. Oh, that's burned in my brain. But the Robbie Brady, it just kind of happened in front of me. It was. I can't stress how hot it was in that. They closed. I don't know if you'd know,
they closed the roof.
There was and no thunderstorm came, but it was still hot. And
I think people kind of looked away after the Wes. Not looked away, but they were kind of like. Resigned to the fact we weren't going to score after the West Hill miss, and then
exactly.
It came within 2 minutes.
Yeah, and like there's a certain parts of that game that just I don't know. It was so hot, like I can't remember parts of it. And also there was just little things that happened after the game that were a bit that soured it a bit. That getting away back to the city centre was a night. Lille was a terrible spot to have that many fans to send. Yeah, I heard Lens was not much better, and that was where
they're
England
both kind of industrial towns as far as I know. Yeah,
I took you.
We had to walk about 5k back in late 20s.
So it's good it was a bit knocked out
here. A little bit, I think. Yeah, like I hate to be so negative, but like I was there and I'm there for such a big win, even if it was Italy B or Italy C, whatever we're calling them.
Still,
it was just big, like they had the equivalent of, maybe this might be a reference everyone gets, but they had the equivalent of like two Lewis cards worth of, like, that's all the public transport was going back to city centre, and there was about one of those coming every 15 minutes.
That's a bit crazy.
And there was all Irish fans,
that's,
all going back to the centre of it.
Really
it was
mad.
Insane. And
like,
so,
if that happens in Ireland, you get
the queues were. So we just walked. It was like we just saw. We arrived quite late to it, to the queue, and we're like, just walk. We're just going to walk, and then we stumbled across. I think it was a Mirage somewhere selling water. I don't remember it. It was we got the last two bottles of water in this burger place. That they weren't selling. selling food. Everyone was just buying drink. Like, I mean, water, Coke, Sprite, anything that was, like, hydrating. But yeah, I hate to be so negative about how it all panned out in the end.
Did you stay out that night then?
No, just like that was the thing. It was so hard to get back to the city centre. We just kind of got to our hotel because it was further into city centre again. So we just got to our hotel. It was like, it's 1 a.m. There's no point. Like, you'll just be walking out there. Can we even get back to our hotel?
But it is one of those matches where, you know, you look at, Paddy Bonner 1990 or Ray Houghton 94 or Ray Houghton 88 or like Robbie Keane's goal. It's like one of those games you can talk to your grandkids about.
Did you feel it was different to the usual international affair?
Yeah, like I thought for the whole game we're going to do it. And that was a very unique feeling. Like I know we missed there was maybe that kind of minute when after Houlihan's missed that chance or scored.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people that's for the moment we thought like that's
but
it
up
over.
Until then,
blowing
like,
it.
We're going to score, and Italy didn't seem up for it at all. It was just like we're definitely getting a point out of it, I was certain we were going to get a win.
Yeah.
I was certain. Now, as I said, the Houlihan thing was a bit different, and that everyone dropped their heads a bit, but up until that moment
I think everyone dropped their heads. That's the difference with the France game. Was I didn't really feel like we were going to score after we went 2-1 down. It kind of just didn't get the feeling that there was a goal coming, whereas against Italy you kind of did. Like I say, you kind of just felt like there was something coming.
Though 2-1 against France was I don't know, it was just nice. I hate to say it because I think this is what Wales did in the semi-final. It was just nice to be there.
Anyway,
it was just lovely to be taking part.
And Roy Keane would hate you.
Yeah, I know. It was just lovely to be there and taking part.
Yeah, but anyway, we didn't win Euro 2016.
Amazingly. It's only 2 weeks since the final.
Only two weeks.
It's already faded well into the rearview mirror.
And nothing has happened since.
Except Big Sam is England manager.
Exactly. Yeah, actually, what we want to kind of get to this week, it's the managers. We were talking about transfers of players last week, but
I want to talk maybe a bit about United and the whole pre-season tour of China.
Do, because it was a shambles.
It was a shambles. Like, I'm not surprised Jose Mourinho was quite upset.
Yeah.
But which do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about Big Sam.
All right.
We all like Big Sam, I think.
I think it's a good appointment.
It was a shock appointment. I don't know. It's the same for you. But like when Roy left, I thought Sam was like 6th, 7th, 8th. Potential manager.
I was ahead of him.
I just didn't see him.
There was all this talk about Klinsmann and all these other heads, but then
I thought Sam was like the option they'd have if everyone else rejected them.
I have to say, I thought that if they were Pell Belton going for an Englishman, I thought they'd either go for him or Harry Redknapp. It was one or the other.
If you're going for Englishman, who else was there? I think Harry's out of the game, two years. So I think that may have worked against him.
But as somebody said, England are like Sunderland. So it makes sense to hire someone like Sam Allardyce. Because like, it sounds like England aren't meant to play this great tiki-taka technical football. They're meant to do the basics right and be physical and get stuck in. They're meant to be a better version of Ireland, I think.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
I think
with a bit of an X factor to actually get the goal and win 1-0.
Sam Allardyce will get them playing.
But the problem is that they have star players.
Yeah, but that
which Sam hasn't really had before, and that's an issue. You wonder, will he be able to?
How dare you, JJ Okocha's turning in his villa somewhere.
I think he will. I think he'll turn out to be a good appointment. I think he'll bring a bit of belief to the England team. I think he'll get them a bit of coherency. He'll actually give them a plan so they'll actually know what they're meant to be doing. And I think they'll improve.
He's different to what they've had before in that, like, they obviously tried the whole, experienced manager and Roy Hodgson and Fabio Capello. That didn't work.
They've tried insanely
the Steve McClaren managers. Thing didn't work. So this is a completely different, and completely different personality as well. They all seem to be pushovers. Even Capello seems to be a bit of a pushover, which I was surprised
about.
Where I actually see it is he is not scared of the media. People have always given out about the fact he plays a certain style of football. He just still goes on and plays it anyway. He doesn't really care what the media says to him. So
But also, like, I think actually the real problem with England is nothing to do with ability or anything like that, because they all play with big clubs and that are relatively successful. Like, I mean, you don't need to be Real Madrid to do well in an international football
to beat Iceland.
Yeah, so I think that he just needs to bring a bit of belief to them and not to be worried about the media all the time.
And like I say, a structure.
Yeah.
Which he will bring in fairness to him. Like, he'll have a tactical plan. It mightn't be the best, most popular.
Did you ever hear his first story about when he went for the England job a couple of years back, where he turned up with that? He said he'd spent all night doing up this huge, impressive, intricate PowerPoint presentation. And when he got out to FA headquarters for the job interview, they told him they don't have facilities for PowerPoint. So he had to go he had to go and print off the PowerPoint presentation and hand it to them in hard copy. And as he said to himself, the effect was lost. When he put that on, he said, trust the FA not to have PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, which actually reminds me of Mike Bassett, England manager. Well, there's a few scenes in that.
That's sort of my point, like that he's like, they've gone with the whole Capello thing, and even Roy Hodgson was a bit of a different thing, but they've gone with the whole, like, oh, let's get someone who's a tactical, you know,
genius, yeah, supposedly.
And, yeah, exactly, and that didn't work out. And the McLaren thing is supposed to be a great coach, young up and coming coach, didn't work out. They went with someone completely different.
But the thing,
and
the thing I would like about Allardyce is, though, he's genuinely, absolutely over the moon to have the job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it is, like, with Capello, you kind of felt like he was taking it because he was like,
oh, he's taking a paycheck. Yeah,
he went off and managed Russia and did a terrible job there as well.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of felt like he was taking it as he was coasting home.
And he
every manager who's taken over Russia has not done well, apart from Goose Hiddink.
Yeah, that's true, but it was. But the players they have now would be even worse than the ones that Capello would have had. Because that coach they have in Russia is meant to be excellent.
Oh, he's well respected, yeah.
But to go back to Allardyce, I think that it's just nice to see that he was genuinely, absolutely over the moon. Like, this for him, this is the pinnacle of management.
Which isn't for a lot of.
I think I don't know about Roy Hodgson. If he was was he 100% thrilled to have the job? I don't know. We'll never know.
I'd say he was.
I'm sure he was.
But for me, the Roy thing was just a very, very safe option. Sam isn't a safe option.
Allardyce, you know, is saying it that he's delighted to have the job, and this is what he's always wanted. And you know, it's great to see a manager.
It's a passion as well that he brings to the.
I think that's the thing that's missing from the English international setup is passion. Like, it's one thing that the Irish team has back. Like, the big difference between the Ireland team in 2016 and 2012 was the fact that one actually had passion and the other one didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a manager who changed tactics when it needed to be.
But I think that, you know, he's proven with West Ham. I thought he was, you know, they had a poor second half of the season last year, but he was actually really...
Well, I don't think it helped that West Ham fans never took to him from the beginning.
But he was he started what Slaven Bilic is finishing.
Yeah.
You know, and he was very successful with them. I mean, he had a fantastic transfer window back in January and he dragged Sunderland out of the relegation zone. You know, so... I think if you look back at his record, the only stain or blemish on his managerial record is his period at Newcastle,
which wasn't even that bad.
Not his fault.
Yeah, Newcastle is a bit of a basket case, you know. So like it was back then.
It still is now. They'll celebrate a fight. What did they beat Spurs by? Was it 6-1? They beat Spurs 6-1 the last day of the season. Celebrated like they've won the FA Cup.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and that's a basket clip. Yeah, exactly.
So you know, and back then it was the same. And I don't think he was actually given a proper chance at it. So when you look at his record, it's very impressive. I mean, he's pretty much been successful in the grand scheme of things. He's been successful over, like, I know he hasn't been winning trophies or anything, but when you look at the grand scheme of things, he's been very successful at doing the job he's been told to do, or you know, he's successful at attaining the goals that he's been set out.
But then you're looking at the whole, you know, the David Moyes thing, which I think we're going to probably get onto a bit later on, but like the whole David Moyes thing going to United, it's all well and good being successful manager at clubs like where relegation is fine, but now you have to step up to being an England manager where, you know, second round, getting knocked out of the second round is not good enough. And the whole point of
only
your
winning
job
is... Only winning it is good enough.
For England...
I think only winning it is good enough for most
But for England...
Fans.
Not for England.
Yeah.
For England, success would be reaching...
Over the next couple of years.
To reach the semi-final would be a huge success for England. If England reached the last semi-final of the World Cup, it would be seen as an unbelievable
success. Well, actually, when you
look
at...
we can see that. Can they see that?
Because 1990 and 1996 are kind of viewed as legendary campaigns. And even though they weren't as good when you actually go game by game... The fact they got to the semis, it's still celebrated.
Sure, they look back on Euro 96 as the pinnacle of you know, that was their Italian 90, and they only reached the semi-final.
Yeah, and they drew against, who was it?
Spain and bet them on penalties.
Yeah, against Spain, bet them on penalties, and Switzerland, as well.
But the 90% of English fans aren't deluded. They know their place in the grand scheme of things. So reaching the last four, even reaching the last eight at this stage would be seen as...
That's my point. Like, so Sam so far has been like just about do enough to not get relegated. Yeah. Like I say the likes of Blackburn, he did that as well. Yeah. And I think he did pretty all right.
Yeah, but then you look what happened when they sacked him and where Blackburn are now. And it's down to that decision.
Well, obviously, that's what I'm saying, but it's more just expectations are higher with England.
I think English fans as well, most of them actually would be happy if they just saw England having a go. Like, you go to the you look at some of their big campaigns where they've gone out in the last eight with Sven-Göran Eriksson, and the only one that people were unhappy really about was the 2002 exit, where they went down 2-1 to Brazil, but they didn't really have a goal when they went 2-1 down.
They had Roy Hodgson for that first game of even the Russia game. They had a go in that game.
Oh no,
they
had a go, but they went out without having a go. I mean, it was
the Iceland game.
It was such a meek surrender to Iceland, but like they didn't have a go. Like the big problem with Roy Hodgson as well is they went out in Euro 2012 to Italy in the quarterfinals without having a goal. I mean, they were battered and they went out on penalties. It wasn't a heroic loss. It was they were just destroyed, but eventually lost in penalties. And then, well, World Cup 2014 was just a disaster. And then, Euro 2016 was a disaster as well.
And Sam hasn't confirmed if Rooney will be captain. I wonder if his position in the team is under a threat.
I'm sure there's a position for him in the team, but he probably shouldn't.
Is there really a position for him in the team? Really?
Well, there's not as a midfielder, but like I just don't see why everyone's afraid to try and play Wayne Rooney as a forward again.
I'm going to cut that clip, and when we're doing World Cup 2018, that's going into the theme song.
We play it at the end of this season.
Yeah,
actually.
We will.
Mourinho's going to be a 10.
Mourinho has him back as the striker.
Mourinho has him as a 10. That'll be where he's going to be for the next season.
Yeah. Moving on to Mourinho and Pep and all that. Of course, they didn't get to play each other because of the shambolic pitch that was in.
I suppose, but just before we go on to that, I do think David Moyes is a brilliant acquisition by Sunderland, and I actually think
I was worried for them this far of the season if they wouldn't get what they would get.
It's actually fallen. It's actually a match made in heaven.
I don't know. I'd worry about David Moyes insofar as he's going to a club now. It's the end of July. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I love David Moyes. I think he was screwed over by United and in Spain as well.
Well, Spain was just I think he just wanted to get a job.
It was strange. Yeah, it was a bit of a strange move. But he's going into a job now at the end of July where he has, 5 weeks left in the transfer window where he has to do everything that he... Yeah, could have taken another job.
There's a good core of a team there.
The thing about it is Sam
but who just about missed relegation.
Sam has left him with a good team overall, I think.
The problem with Sunderland have been, for the last 4 years, I think, maybe even more, they've been close to relegation, brought in a manager to stop them from getting relegated. Yeah. Then the manager leaves, generally at the start of the season after. So they have no consistency there. I'd worry about David Moyes going in there. He has 5 weeks to get a squad together and to get to know the club.
It's not ideal.
It's the right size club for him.
Oh, big time, 100%.
There's not much expectation. I think stay up is kind of the thing.
I think this season will be stay up. And
I hope it works out for him because I think
they have a good stadium and actually they've got a bit of history as well. It's a bit like Everton in a way.
The teams have much more money now. There's a bit of a chance, like when he took over Everton, you know,
they were close to relegation.
They would have been kind of in the same kind of position, a bit of a team that flirted with relegation a lot.
I think they're only four or five games away from. It was towards the end of the season, and they nearly got relegated.
So I think that it'll suit him. I think it'll suit.
I just hope, he gets a good season, because if they stay up, for example, this season, and he gets a proper go at pre-season all next year, I think that he could actually do well and be a top 10, top 12 club. Because I think he's that kind of manager who can get them like he did with Everton. He got them into top 6, top 7 most seasons.
But to go on anyway to United and City and all that, I just think that ultimately, this International Champions Cup, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That's on in Dublin and China and America and I think Limerick, and it's on everywhere.
The world.
It's on all over the world.
Who's playing in Limerick?
The world. I'm not sure, but
Celtic is are Celtic? Playing.
Oh, Inter Milan are playing.
Inter Milan are playing Celtic. And who's playing in Dublin then?
Barcelona and Celtic.
Who cares? It's a friendly. I was there to see Messi in a friendly. I was bored out of my mind.
He has blonde hair now, so at least there's something new to see.
You don't get much of a chance to see Messi in the flesh. So.
At the end of the day, who really cares? Unless it's competitive, it doesn't really matter.
I'll be happy to see Messi in the flesh, to be perfectly honest. It is Messi. Yeah,
I only like competition. And I'd be taking a leaf out of the Mourinho book where he says that he doesn't really care about the results as long as everyone comes home without getting injured.
But
Which is the philosophy 4-1? That has underpinned this show since.
They lost 4-1 to Dortmund, isn't
it? But sure, who cares?
I know, but losing 4-1.
But like, it doesn't matter. Like, it says nothing about what's going to happen.
They actually, in fairness, they look like they cared. I was watching that game. They look like they actually mattered to them.
But it doesn't really.
No, well, I don't know. I think it does.
I just think it's stupid. You've been dragged halfway around the world.
Oh, absolutely.
And no, they don't need the money. Like, ultimately, they actually don't need the money.
But the United board are all about money. They could be billionaires. They are billionaires, and they still only care about making 20 quid from someone.
But what I don't understand about all this is you're jeopardising your performance in the Premier League and the Champions League, where you will earn a huge amount more. You'll earn multiples of what you'll earn from these pre-season fiascos.
It's about the long-term thing, though, of promoting the club, obviously, in Asia.
I think you can do that without.
Oh, absolutely. It's ridiculous. But it's Gasset Mourinho's been so pick this week.
He's right though, because you know, last season Chelsea started the season poorly, and half that was because they were dragged halfway around the world to take part in these bogus rubbish pre-season
You're a big
tournaments
fan.
Pre-season tournaments, and the problem is like that the players are burnt out most of the time now, and you don't need to, like, how is that going to be of any benefit to Manchester United and getting themselves right by being over involved where a plane can't land and has to land in another airport and they don't get to their hotel till like 2 in the morning and they have their dinner at 2 in the morning
and the press conference room is too small?
Well, maybe, unless it's like a lad's holiday kind of thing.
Is that much footballers don't get to do that as much at the moment? Like, do they is it really any benefit to be back in England, or where are you?
Well, I don't know.
Like, they're always on the go.
But I just think that they are always on the go, but God, you can't be on the go 12 months of the year without it catching up with you, and that's why you see you an awful lot more wear and tear, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the point of the United board. Like, they went to America 2 years ago. I don't know where they went last year, but 2 years ago, and Van Gaal's first year in charge, he gave out because they were traipsing across America the whole time.
I just think they're sacrificing, and I'm sure most fans are the same, but I do think they're sacrificing I think a short-term gain, they're sacrificing.
Well, I think they're more looking at the long-term gain. It's crazy because, you know, like I say, United are so rich and they're so big in Asia, they don't need to be out in Asia. Like, it's not as if people in Asia don't know who Man United
are.
There's probably an element of giving back to those fans in America, Asia, or wherever it is.
But at the end of the day, if United don't win anything for the next 20 years, they might find that their fans at home and abroad decrease.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah.
Big time.
Apart from those kind of managerial changes, there's not much else kind of going through the Premier League, is there?
No, I suppose it's still...
Like, the Leicester thing is still kind of going on, particularly Arsenal and Mahrez and all this.
Yeah, it's hard to know what's going on.
Arsenal, what are they doing? Come on, get going after Leicester's stars. It's a disgrace. Leave them alone, will you?
It gets me really angry, actually, to see some of the Leicester players up and leaving. It gets me rationally angry.
I shouldn't be surprised.
No, but I think it's a really crappy thing to do.
But this is the capitalist footballer in full flight.
But come on, you're like, let's, you're N'Golo Kanté, you're Jamie Vardy, or you're Riyad Mahrez.
Well, Jamie Vardy's staying.
But don't make a fuss about it, just stay. Like, it's going to be possibly another one of the best years of your career. Probably it's a lap of honour. You don't even have to try, you don't even have to finish, you just have to not get relegated, pretty much. And just play in the Champions League.
At
least if you do go to Arsenal, at least you're guaranteed that. You might not guarantee trophies, but you're guaranteed.
The only thing we should be grateful is the fact that at least in the Premier League, you're going into the season going, well, at least there's some kind of competition. I mean, you're looking at across the leagues in Europe now and you're going, Juventus have just bought
Higuain.
You know, so there is a massive acquisition that is just going to turn them into an even bigger club now.
And at the same time, weakening one of the rivals, Napoli.
One of their direct rivals. I mean, you look at La Liga, and it is Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and you go to Germany and it's effectively Bayern Munich. Maybe Dortmund with other signings might be different this year.
But if Dortmund, if any team is going to win in Germany, it'll have to be because Bayern Munich slip up in some way. Like they could win. I'm saying they could, but it's Bayern's unless they do something wrong. It's not Dortmund's if they play to their most.
It might not be the best league in Europe, but it's certainly the most competitive of the big leagues, the Premier League.
The Jose Pep thing is going to be mad, because obviously Jose knows the Premier League a lot better than Pep.
That's the kind of stuff I'm not really looking forward to. Like, the tabloids will be jumping on this stuff, like the Pep Jose thing. Even like they were wondering, would they shake hands? Of course they're going to shake hands.
Yeah, well,
that's as much as what they did say.
It could be amazing. It could easily turn out that neither of them
do well.
Are fighting for the Premier League.
Yeah.
It could, you just don't know. You know, like, who would have thought last season that Chelsea would have a massive collapse under Jose Mourinho and that Leicester would end up winning the league? I know people go, oh, it's hard to see, but, like, you know, that Man City team's not...
It was hard to see because we all predicted Leicester go down.
that Man City team, it's not like Bayern Munich. Like, I mean, they don't have the mentality of winners.
Not on the same level as Munich did or Barcelona.
No, so he's a lot of work with his hands. He probably has a lot of problems there. I mean, they always look really poor when Kompany or Yaya Touré is missing, and he has to fix that. And then, you know, Arsenal, well, do they actually have any backbone? Can we find it? I don't know. United still have all the problems they had from when Ferguson left, really. And
I think in United they have a winner now in Mourinho, which they didn't have in David Moyes and Van Gaal. But, you know what I mean? So they have someone who's experienced in the Premier League as well.
But as we saw with Mourinho in his first season back at Chelsea, he didn't win the league that season because he had a lot of work to do.
It's very drab. His first season of Chelsea was very anticlimactic.
His biggest claim to fame in that season was stopping Liverpool from winning the league.
Which he loved.
I think Klopp's first season. You know, there's a lot of like high profile managers, like really high profile.
I can't see the Klopp Liverpool thing changing at all. I think it'll be stop start until he just either leaves or settles in there for the rest of his life. I don't see it changing. I can't. It's had three false dawns now, I think, already.
The Klopp thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think
Are they false dawns?
Well, I mean, like, he would have, let's say, a comprehensive win over like a 4-0 win. None come to mind exactly. Yeah. The exact comprehensive win. Yeah. But he had a few kind of comprehensive. There was at least three moments last season where, all right, it's clicked. It's clicked now. And then it just drab and they'd lose to West Brom or they'd draw with someone.
But at least he'll say now, this is my squad. This is like, I've had a summer transfer window and this is my squad now. I can go into it. I don't know. I can see what you mean, but I can still see that working.
But why is he getting rid of Joe Allen? Or why are they getting rid of Joe Allen? Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like he has the control he wants.
But
Liverpool as well, like, success. Like, like the top four, if you're going to judging on paper, is about to get even more difficult to get into. I mean, Arsenal, for the likes of Arsenal, it's another season like last season and they won't finish in the top four.
Why can't Spurs just build on what they did?
You see,
if anyone, like, Spurs, if I was to put my money anywhere on like a team to finish top three, I'm not saying they even win the title because, you know, anyone
they need to buy some players, though.
Or maybe not upsetting the mold is the best.
Well, I think the problem with Spurs was they ran out of steam.
Yeah.
You can't play the
add to the squad rather than
like the problem with and now they're playing Champions League football. You know, next season, that's another, like, you can't keep playing the same team over and over again.
Did they run out of steam? Like, they would have won that league if Leicester aren't there. They would have won that league.
They wouldn't have.
Do you not think so?
Because complete collapse.
They collapse. Yeah.
I don't know.
Arsenal even finished ahead of them.
I think
if there wasn't that, I think they lost once they saw Leicester just a certain amount ahead. They just lost.
Well, no, because remember Leicester.
Sure, it came down to the game against Chelsea, and they didn't have them to beat Chelsea. And also,
they spent more time kicking Chelsea than they did trying to put it.
It was very entertaining. So entertaining.
Such a harkback to the really good day. It
was a good Monday night football. It was brilliant.
Can we have more of that, please? But I think that Spurs. They just lack something. I think they got the level of points they got last season is less than what they got this season when they finished in the Champions League.
Everyone else was awful last year. I mean, you look at it. I mean,
sure, Arsenal only finished on something. Like
Arsenal were awful. City were nowhere near as good as should have been. United were nowhere near as good as should have been. Chelsea as well. So like Spurs were. Probably at the same level they always are. It's just that kind of pushed them up to the top. I would love it. And again, I think everyone would love it. Everyone would love it. I would love it if it was a similar season to last year where it's not the usual. I'm worried that it'll just go back to Chelsea, City, United, Arsenal.
Although, what I wouldn't mind is if you could somehow have five or six of those actually neck and neck for a long time.
I know
you're not going to have everyone up there at the end of the season, but if you could get five or six that are neck and neck for about two-thirds of the season, and then maybe for the final third you might have three teams going for it.
If Spurs and Liverpool are probably the two most realistic, if you discount Leicester, we shouldn't do that on our peril, but Spurs and Liverpool are pushing that the original top four or the legendary top four for most of the season, and I would love it if at the end of the season like there's only 5 points between 6th place and 4th place and there was actually something to play for. But I just kind of get the feeling that order is going to be restored this year and it'll be kind of the top four that it's always been, which would be a bit disappointing.
Well, Arsenal have a big challenge to stay in that top four.
But we say that every year, don't we? We say that every single year. This year, Arsenal finished top four.
Well, I always love the Guardian or the BBC where every year they'll go, there's top four and Arsenal are never in it. And then every year Arsenal do get end up in it.
But in fairness, they're not losing players.
Maybe this is the year they'll win it. Who knows? I mean, the battles would be interesting. I would love, like, Wenger is coming towards the end of his time at Arsenal. Would he not just want to really get one over on Mourinho at this stage? I mean, like, would that not motivate you enough to go out and buy a couple of, like just spend like 80 million on some player you deem is better than what they're replacing, and just go and try and take Mourinho out? Like, the satisfaction of that would be, and then retire and you go, yeah, but I bet him in the last season.
They finished fifth, but they beat Mourinho, well, so no,
but
it's
like,
fine.
But like, you know, like, if he could win this Premier League in his last, this could win his last season. If he could win the Premier League in this season, it would be great.
Yeah.
That's why.
Do you think he'll walk away after the season?
He'd be Arsenal fan. It could be great if he won the Premier League.
Like, it could well do. Like, that's why I'm kind of going. I'm just surprised that they haven't. Like, I'd be surprised if they don't sign one. I know they signed Xhaka for 30 million, but I'd be surprised if they don't spend 50 or 60 million on one more player.
A centre forward.
Yeah, I reckon a centre forward. Now I don't know who that's going to be at this stage.
Yeah,
is there anyone out there who's maybe like going that's worth 60?
Mahrez would be an interesting signing.
Yeah, he'd still be setting up Giroud, which is a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem.
But anyway,
I think Arsenal could do with the change in their tactics and actually go back to revert to an old 4-4-2 style formation where you have someone like Sanchez coming off Giroud's shoulder and Giroud laying the ball down to him like they were doing with Griezmann.
But then you have Ozil. The Ozil, if you call it a problem, which is where you play him in a if you're playing him in a 4-4-2, you play him at wide on the left.
Yeah,
I give him freedom to move around.
I'm hoping we start seeing new tactics. We've been stuck with the old lone man up front now for about five or six seasons. I'm hoping we
see. It's masqueraded as 4-3-3.
Yeah,
fake 4-3-3.
Although Leicester did bring back a kind of 4-2.
I wouldn't mind seeing a return to the traditional 4-4-2. I'm sure it's coming soon, but I hope sooner rather than later. Yeah. Sam will bring it back for you.
Anyway, Gary Doherty would have played in 4-4-2s. We're going to play one of his an interview myself and Conor Neville from balls.ie did with him earlier this season. That's coming up in part two. And then in part three, there's Greg Lee, who spoke to me about Gaddafi's son more so, and his own football career in Serie A. But that leaves us now at this portion of the show. Derek, thanks for coming in.
No worries.
Killian, cheers for coming
thanks
in
for
again.
Me.
And Joe.
Raph will be back next week.
Yep, so part two, Gary Doherty, and then Greg Lee, part three.